Die Presse. Wie redet da, Thomas?
Ah, Martina, du hast gelernt.
Ja, das war ein Versuch, guten Tag auf Albanisch zu sagen. Wir haben ja einen Albanien-Schwerpunkt vorbereitet.
So ist es, ja, genau.
Zunächst aber ein Hallo an unsere Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer. Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge der Eastside Stories. Wir sind Martina Czarnowska
und Thomas Seifert.
Wir schauen heute in den Südosten Europas. Thomas, du warst gerade dort. Erzähl mal kurz.
Ja, ich komme aus Pristina und ist Tirana zurück und habe dort Eindrücke mitgenommen und auch ein Interview, aber mehr verrate ich noch nicht. Wir wollen die Spannung noch ein wenig halten.
Okay. Allerdings können wir schon einiges trotzdem vorwegnehmen. Sowohl der Kosovo als auch Albanien wollen EU-Mitglied werden, wobei mit Albanien bereits Beitrittsverhandlungen laufen und der Kosovo noch entfernt davon ist. In Tirana sind die Hoffnungen groß, dass es mit einer Aufnahme bis zum Ende des Jahrzehnts klappt. Zumindest unterstreicht das dein noch geheimnisvoller Gesprächspartner.
So, wir lüften das Geheimnis. Dieser Gesprächspartner ist niemand anderer als der Ministerpräsident des Landes, Edi Rama. Er ist ja auch eine, ja, man kann sagen, legendäre Figur in der Region, seit Ewigkeiten im Amt. Eine sehr spannende, aber auch nicht unumstrittene Figur.
Und er ist auch sehr optimistisch, was den EU-Beitritt eben seines Landes anbelangt. Auch wenn er weiß, dass es noch einen weiten Weg gibt. Seit 11 Jahren ist Albanien EU-Beitrittskandidat. Seit 3 Jahren werden Gespräche darüber geführt. Und dabei geht es auch um eine Justizreform, die eine große Herausforderung ist. Nicht zuletzt im Zuge der Korruptionsbekämpfung wurden zum Beispiel Richter und Staatsanwälte durchleuchtet und etliche mussten ihre Posten aufgeben. Es dauert Jahre, neue Leute auszubilden.
Ja, aber dennoch ist die Bereitschaft dazu hoch. Warum? Weil die EU-Begeisterung ist sehr groß. Die Menschen wollen in die EU, sie wollen nach Europa. Das habe ich übrigens auch im benachbarten Kosovo gespürt. Und sie sind bereit, wirklich durch alle Ringe zu hüpfen, die hier in diesem Zirkus hängen, weil sie auch wissen, es ist gut für Albanien.
Und du hast jetzt gerade den Kosovo erwähnt und von dort kommt unsere heutige Voice Message, nämlich aus Pristina.
Ganz genau, sie kommt von Dani Lasi. Er ist im Think Tank KCSS, also Kosovo Center for Security Studies.
Voice Message. What's up, Pristina?
So, Tung, përshëndetje, unë jam Ramadan Ilazi, jam përgjës për ullumtimin qendrë kosovare për studimin sigurisë, mirë se vini në Prishtinë. The winter market in Pristina is amazing. There is here in the Skanderbeg Square, there's almost every night now music and glue wine and very nice atmosphere. And at the cathedral, the Christmas market, it's also live there. There's performances. We just had a new single out from Rita Ora and a local singer. We pretty much, I think, are in a very good mood here in Pristina now in December. But of course, we are also having issues with electricity, so that is a bit of a bummer. But other than that, the Christmas market in Pristina is awesome and it gives a very good vibe.
Jetzt haben wir schönes Albanisch gehört. Interessant, dass Weihnachtsmärkte, etwas, das vor allem im deutschsprachigen und nordeuropäischen Raum weit verbreitet ist, auch in Südosteuropa ihren Platz gefunden haben.
Ja, das ist richtig. Aber es ist viel mehr als das. Also ich habe dort auch Halloween erlebt. Es war auch, die halbe Stadt war bemalt und hat sich an Gruseln erfreut. Und Pristina und Tirana sind beide sehr pulsierende Städte. Da spürt man das Leben, ja.
Aus Tirana hast du uns nicht nur unser heutiges Gespräch, sondern auch einen kleinen Städtebericht mitgebracht. Das hören wir uns jetzt an.
Tirana has become a lively capital in the past years, where you can grasp the excitement that is now being felt in the capital of a country that is hoping to join the EU in 2030. An event I've been at is a testament to that vibe. A few days ago, I found myself at the Tula Art Center, one of Tirana's most distinctive cultural spaces. The occasion was the vinyl launch of Shndrit. Well, how do I spell that correctly? I don't know. Shndrit means shine, and the new EP by Shkodra Elektronike, an Albanian folktronica duo that has just achieved international fame at Eurovision 2025. The duo, songwriter-producer Kole Lacha and singer-songwriter Beatrice Gjergj has represented Albania in Basel with the song Sjerm, means fire, finishing at 8th place in the grand final. It was one of Albania's best Eurovision results ever, and the two are local celebrities. The event was part of Tula's Museum of Listening series, not a concert, but a curated cultural experience. First, there was an artist talk at 9 p.m. We listened to the entire EP on a high-fidelity sound system, the vinyl spinning on a turntable. Let's listen in a bit. Tula Art Center itself embodies Tirana's cultural transformation. The venue calls itself your alternative space, hosting art exhibitions, photography workshops, visual art labs, and its own record store. That night, it was packed with young Albanians celebrating not just the musical act, but what that act represented. Albanian culture meeting international recognition. Traditional folk music reimagined for the 21st century, and a country asserting its place on the European cultural map. This is the energy pulsating through Tirana today, a city transformed, ambitious, and bursting with creative confidence. Among those shaping this transformation is Prime Minister Edi Rama himself, an artist-turned-politician who has presided over Albania's dramatic makeover. Together with Konrad Kramer from Kurier and Franziska Cindele from Profil, we met him at his office in Tirana to discuss the country's European ambitions, the challenges ahead, and what Albania brings to the table. My first question was straightforward. Why should Europe let Albania in?
Well, I think it's about the broader picture. It's not just about Albania. It's about the whole region here, the Western Balkans, and the European Union itself. And I believe that is not feasible to have this part of Europe being detached from the European Union, and it's even very, very unique in the history to have this geopolitical reality of the European Union with two borders, one outside border and one inside border. And within the inside border is the Western Balkans. So for the reasons that have to do with the security of Europe, that have to do with the cohesion of Europe, that have to do with unity of Europe, it's absolutely clear, at least to me, that there is no other way but getting the countries of the Western Balkans inside the European Union.
Rama's optimism stands in stark contrast to the recent past. Just a few years ago, French President Emmanuel Macron blocked the opening of accession negotiations, casting doubt on the entire enlargement process. We wanted to know what changed.
Listen, when vetoes, as you mentioned, were very common, it was a different time. And I think, unfortunately, the European Union had somehow lost the attention towards the future and towards the strategic importance of the enlargement, which I like to call unification, because it's not even an enlargement in the case of the Western Balkans, which are just in the middle, and it's more unification. Now the time is different. Many things have changed, and first and foremost, it has changed the level of certainty of the European Union vis-à-vis its own self. So I don't. For the moment, the European Union is not as self-sufficient as it felt some years ago. And I hope this will remain like that and it will not change, because things may change again.
For a man who, by his own admission, hates losing, Rama has made a bold promise. Albania will join the EU by 2030. It's a risky bet, one that could either cement his legacy or expose him to accusations of selling false hope.
I have not said it just like that. I have said it based on an agreement we have with the European Commission to end the negotiations within 27. So it's on the table, but there is a plan, there are deadlines, there are a lot of blocks of work to be dealt with, but it's part of our plan with the European Commission. So it's not just us in this, and we needed for that a big support. We got the big support, and then 2030 is another deadline that is put there, considering that after the end of the negotiations, we might need another 2 years for the ratifications and for the acceptance of all the parliaments. So this is a bit the calculus behind it. Now, can it change? Of course, it can change, but not because of us. If it changed because of them, it's another story.
But procedural progress is one thing. Deep institutional reform is another. In Brussels, there are concerns about whether Albania can genuinely transform its institutions in such a short time frame, or whether this will become some sort of Potemkin membership. Impressive on paper, but hollow in practice.
Will we be Austria in 2 years? I'm telling you, no. Not at all. But the accession is related to some very clear, specific principles and criteria that you have to fulfill overall. And then it's, you know, fighting this and fighting that is a never-ending story for everyone. So we will continue afterwards. But as things are, I don't see risks of indigestions at this phase. But then later on, we have to do more, of course.
Nothing illustrates Albania's reform efforts and their costs more dramatically than SPAC, the Special Anti-Corruption Prosecution. This powerful institution has investigated everyone from the former mayor of Tirana to members of Rama's own cabinet. It's an extraordinary gamble, creating an anti-corruption body strong enough to prosecute your own allies.
It's not something that I didn't see coming, or it's not something that's happening out of the blue. It's something that we knew, and I said before it even existed, I said that we need to build a mechanism of justice that should be able to prove itself independent by investigating and by indicting and by convicting, no matter what the side. So it's not as nice as to go in the opera. It's painful. It's bitter, but it's the only way. And is it perfect? No. Do they also make mistakes? Of course they do. But at the end of the day, there is one thing that we should do everything to not touch, which is the independence we have given to them.
But reform creates its own tensions. Take environmental protection, one of the EU accession chapters. The day before our interview, we had spoken with officials working on water quality standards. Inevitably, the conversation turned to Vlora Airport project, a controversial development in the ecologically sensitive Nata Lagoon. Some officials privately admitted that if the project were proposed today, it would raise serious red flags.
I don't know with which officials you spoke, but I think We have made very clear time and again that the project is absolutely not harmful and that it has been there long ago. So we didn't make an airport where there was never an airport. It was an airport. So, but of course, you know, there are people that in their own right, they want countries to build nothing and to do nothing else but just take care of the nature, which I respect a lot as a position. But is it feasible? I don't think so. So we have also to build. We have also to do things. Otherwise, you know, it's not sustainable both ways. So we have to do everything to do things right, to do things in balance, but and people then will say what they have to say. It's like for the opposition before, you know. If you call yourself green and you don't talk green all the time, how can you pretend to be green? You have to do it. And all this different points of view help then to find somewhere the balance. On both, yeah. And it will be, the airport, it should be open next year. And also the investments should start next year.
The Flora area is set for a dramatic transformation. Not only will the airport open next year, but the region will also host luxury resorts developed by Jared Kushner, son-in-law of Donald Trump. It's the kind of high-profile investment that puts Albania on the map, but also raises eyebrows about the nature of these connections. We wanted to know, how did you come across that Kushner got interested in Albania?
There's always a moment you get interested in someone or in something, you know. It's not necessarily something that one can explain. You just, you know, happen to be somewhere in a moment in time, and then you get married. So it's about just coincidence, you know. It's not that I know how exactly it happened, but it happens. So they came, they visited, they loved this country, they came back, and then they started to think about doing something.
In Brussels, EU officials often express frustration. If only the Western Balkan countries could work together, speak with one voice, and stop their endless feuds. This is quite tiring to the political elites in Brussels and the rest of the EU.
In that regard, I have a very clean record of not having engaged in any type of fight. So I have the most peaceful record possible. So, but I must say that although, again, it's not Switzerland, but it's so different from what it was. It's so much more different. It's so much more peaceful, and there is so much more cooperation at the end of the day that we should not complain. What has been done in the last 10 years has never happened in the previous 1,000 years. So these guys in Brussels, I don't know who they are, but they should look the glass half full in this case, not half empty.
Albania's location demands a delicate balancing act. The country must navigate between East and West, between American influence and European integration, between old powers and new investors. Rama has become a master of this game, meeting with both Jared Kushner and Alex Soros, maintaining ties across political divides. What has he learned from walking this tightrope? And what about Russia?
What I learned from this period in office about EU is that more you love EU, tougher the love is, which is okay. When it comes to myself and to us, I think that we are too small to pick. So we need to talk to everyone and to be able to understand as much as possible everyone. When it comes to Russia, we have a very particular relation because of particular history. So we have been separated with Russia in 1960 because we wanted to keep Stalin. They wanted to get rid of Stalin. And it is what happened. So we kept Stalin, not Soviet Union, for the following 30 years. And this created a big, very big discontent in the psyche of our people about Russians and Russia. So that's why after 35 years of, let's say, democratic life, we never had a visit to Russia and we were never visited by Russia. And we don't miss it, frankly. But when it comes to the European Union, I think European Union should talk to Russia and should not continue to outsource its foreign policy to Washington, because at the end of the day, Russia is the neighbor of European Union, is not the neighbor of United States. And with neighbors, you have to talk. So, you asked about Kushner and Soros. Yes, they are both friends. They may not like each other, although I'm not sure. But they may anyhow. So it's about them. It's not about me. So why? I got to know Jared when it was not clear if his father-in-law would go to jail or would go to the White House. And it didn't matter to me then. It doesn't matter to me now, because I think this is an investment and this is a friendship for a long time. So it will go, it will outlive Trump himself. So it's not a political friendship at all. And this is what I said then, and this is what I say now. And I know since long time Alex, and we are friends, and so it's the same when his side is in power or his side is under attack in the United States. It's not for me to judge, it's not for me to be part of it. I hear. This is Albania, and this is the home to every friend we have, so they are both at home here.
Given Albania's position at the crossroads of different spheres of influence, we wondered whether Europe might learn something from Rama's pragmatism, especially in an era where the continent must deal with Trump's America, Putin's Russia, and Erdogan's Turkey simultaneously.
Listen, in this, I may not be politically correct, but I may be totally wrong, but I'm not worried at all. I don't think Russia is going to invade anyone in the European Union, because they are not being able to win over Ukrainian army in that part of Ukraine where they have their imperialistic appetite, let alone attacking. I think their provocations are part of a strategy, and I very much hope that what is happening is not the same that it happened with the Star Wars that brought Soviet Union down to its knees because of the economic bankruptcy. I hope it's not the same. It will not happen the same to Europe.
Walking through Tirana, you feel it everywhere. The expectation, the hope, the belief that EU membership will transform everything. It's palpable in conversations, visible in the construction sites, audible in the plans people make for their futures. But are these expectations realistic? And what happens if they are disappointed?
Have you ever seen someone that wants to marry and does not have big expectations, And can you lower the expectations of someone that wants to marry? You can say whatever you want about marriage. People marry, and you can even divorce and then marry again. So like me. So it's good to have high expectations. They help you to have a good life for a moment or for a long moment. And they help you also not only to have a good life by hoping, but also to have good energy and to do things. So in that regard, the European Union is very much a source of positive energy for the country, which is great.
For Rama, the EU accession process is valuable regardless of the final outcome. It's not just about joining a club, he says. It's about fundamentally transforming how the country works. This might be the most important insight from Albania's journey.
What will be next? But there is one thing that many people, or maybe all the people, I don't know, don't get in our willingness. Negotiating with the European Union is an amazing know-how transfer process. So, because it's not that we are doing homework to please them. We are doing homework to make Albania different and to make Albania more European, more democratic, more based on its own institutions and not on its own personalities and so on and so forth. So the European Union is the only source of this kind of know-how. You don't find it anywhere else. So I take the example of Afghanistan or Iraq, you know. They failed big time because they don't have the European Union perspective. And because no one else can teach a country to build institutions. You know, the Americans don't have the patience for that. They have the philosophy of fixing things with bombs and then preaching. But the long process is something only the European Union knows how to do, and something only Europe has as a let's say, I cannot say national treasure, because it's not just one nation, but as a treasure of this continent, you know. So if you take Europe from the equation of Albania of these years, and if you take the European Union from the path we have pursued until now, and you try to imagine how we would be today, it's a totally different thing. So we would not be able to be where we are today if we would not have the European Union. And if we would not have suffered the headaches that come with it, the neuroses that come with it, it's very neurotic to work with the European Union. It's sometimes you feel like you want to get on the top of a minaret and scream like crazy. But at the end, it's really very beneficial. It's really very, very helpful, very healthy. So it's full of bitter medicines, but they are medicines. They are not poison. So.
Yet shadows remain. There are concerns about illicit money being laundered through Tirana's construction boom. It's the kind of issue that could derail accession talks, or at least provide ammunition to skeptics.
And listen, I would say this. If you check, I didn't check the last number, but if you check the last number of the amount of drugs that are being washed in Europe, I think Tirana or Albania is just a very small place for washing all this money. So it's just, you know, It's just part of us. We have a say, better shit than small, you know. When you are small, you have also to suffer these kind of things that are totally out of proportions, you know, because do we have problems of that sort? Yes, we have. But do these problems are such that to make a fuss, a European fuss about it, I think it is ridiculous.
Finally, we asked Rama to put on his artist's hat, to think beyond economic integration and institutional reform. Albania would be the first Muslim-majority country to join the European Union, albeit one with a remarkably secular culture. What does that mean? What does Albania bring to Europe's cultural fabric?
If all Muslims were like the Muslims of Albania, Allah and Jesus would have been the happiest for the humankind. I mean, yeah, we have Muslims, we have Christians, I'm Catholic, my wife is Muslim, our two kids from previous joint ventures are Christian Orthodox. We have a little one now that will decide what he will want to be. So there is a common denominator in all this, that 92% of the Albanians, they are in love with the European Union. So in one sense, yeah, it's great. You know, it's another way to show that it's not about Muslims or Christians. It's about the geography, the geopolitics, and it's about the system. So if we were the same people in another geography, and let's say in Iraq, instead of Iraq or Afghanistan, we would have failed. We are here. We have no chance to fail because of Europe. And because we feel European, we are European, and Europe is our main religion. And then all the rest is sub-religions when it comes to Europe. When we will get in, then maybe we'll be less religious about Europe. But for the moment, we are fanatics.
As I left the Prime Minister's office and stepped back into Tirana's Boulevardi Deshmored e Kombit, I thought about the duality I'd witnessed in this city. A country racing toward the future while grappling with its past, a leader playing a high-stakes game with confidence and pragmatism, and a capital city that embodies all these contradictions, somewhere between Balkan tradition and European aspiration, between old certainties and new possibilities. Whether Albania makes it to 2030 or not, one thing is clear. The journey itself is transforming the country in ways that will endure long after the accession date is decided.
Ein Gespräch mit Albaniens Ministerpräsident Edi Rama können Sie auch in der nächsten Ausgabe der European Voices lesen. Diese erscheint schon in einigen Tagen.
Und wir befassen uns darin mit Europas Situation zwischen den Machtblöcken, den USA, der Achse China-Russland. Und für Europa gilt, wie diesem englischen Sprichwort, if you're not on the table, you're on the menu. Und das erleben wir gerade auch zuletzt erst in der Ukraine-Debatte.
Ja, und so muss sich unser Kontinent schwierige Fragen stellen. Von wem machen wir uns abhängig und zu welchem Preis? Wie sich gegen hybride Angriffe wehren, wie sich positionieren gegenüber zunehmend autoritär agierenden Partnern.
Und Informationen zur neuen Nummer der European Voices finden Sie in den Shownotes. Ebenso den Link zum Gespräch mit Edi Rama.
Das war Kapitel 8 unserer Eastside Stories. Jeden letzten Donnerstag im Monat erscheint eine neue Podcast-Folge.
Danke, dass Sie dabei waren.
Hören Sie uns wieder.
Servus.
Los für Schenja.